Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Situation Room.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Situation Room. I'm here with my co-host, Gabe Ferguson. You guys can check us out. We're both on Twitter. I'm at Raven Sit Room. He's at Gabe Fergie. And we're coming live to you because the Ravens apparently had this draft thing, Gabe. And they had a lot of picks, like, what, 10, 11 picks total, right?
The Ravens went into the draft with 11 picks. They came out of the draft with 11 picks. They weren't the same 11 picks that they went in with, so that's a little interesting. We had a big trade, Marquise Brown. Not something I think that we were expecting necessarily, but it wasn't crazy considering some of the chatter we'd heard. So that I think is, you know, probably the biggest shocker of the whole draft is, you know, trading Marquise Brown, getting a first round pick in return, essentially, which is, you know, pretty good value for that. And then, you know, using that pick and being able to kind of just go with the flow and, you know, making some interesting selections along the way. I think the Ravens got universally lauded for, you know, hitting on value throughout the draft, letting players fall to them, not reaching for specific positions, not reaching for need. But I think there's, you know, some positives and negatives when you do that. Sometimes you don't necessarily get that, you know, position that you needed when you trade away your wide receiver. So it's interesting. I think we'll discuss a little bit more as we go into these different players, but overall, I think it was a good use of their draft picks. I'll put it that way.
Well, you know, I think value is a really interesting lens to have this discussion. And as we talk about each one of these guys individually, I think that can be part of it. Obviously, at the top end of this draft, you're talking about taking positions that other teams have either devalued in terms of what they think is would be like classified as a premium position, or even, you know, devalued by the Ravens historically. You know, center is a position that the Ravens have never taken a first round pick on. Is a position that they haven't even really taken a high round pick on. The last time I can remember the Ravens taking a higher drafted center was Jason Brown in the third round, and that turned out to be a colossal failure. Hopefully that's not what we end up seeing. Well, maybe not a colossal failure, but it was certainly a failure, and he never became the player that they thought he could be. And so I think it'll be interesting to take a look at, you know, are the Ravens able to extract the surplus value from positions that might not be considered premium, and then whether or not those positions actually are or aren't considered premium. Because I think especially, and we might as well just get right into Kyle Hamilton and his first pick in the draft, where the Ravens stood pat at 14, rushed to the podium. Yeah. I mean, I was still, and if anybody was watching us, on the live draft feed with Ken and Coach and Jason from Huddle It Up Films, you know, we were stunned at how quick the Ravens made that pick at 14. There was no consideration on their part to even look to try and trade that pick. They made it immediately. To me, that says that, one, the Ravens love Kyle Hamilton, but two, that the Ravens might value safety more than the rest of the league looks at the value of a safety. We're seeing a lot more split too high. We're seeing a lot more needs where you need two guys that can do both things, both inside and outside the box. Do you think the league undervalued safety, or do you think it was just all tied up in that 40 time for Kyle Hamilton?
So there's a few things I want to hit on here, but let's start with the value of the safety position, because I do think that the Ravens might value that position differently, or they might just value the player differently. Because, I mean, if you look at how a lot of teams, or maybe not, I shouldn't say teams, how a lot of like analysts evaluated Kyle Hamilton going into this draft cycle. He was considered by some to be the best player in the draft, by many to be a top five player. And then, you know, he kind of slowly started falling away and away and away as these so-called valuable positions moved up the draft board. So, and we saw that happen in this draft. The positions that got taken early, and this was a draft where we didn't have any good quarterbacks. So it was offensive tackle, it was cornerback, and it was edge player. Those were the ones that got just hammered. And they were, in my opinion, overdrafted at the sake of, you know, getting those premier positions. So you have a player like Kyle Hamilton, who is like a unique, like rare, like player at this position. And yes, he plays safety, but he does a lot more than just play safety. He plays in the box, he plays deep, he plays post, he plays too high. He'll play your robber. He can play slot. He can rush off the edge. He's a great run defender. So this is a player who is like the epitome of what a defensive, like versatile defensive player is in today's NFL. You know, I think the closest comp that we've seen to him is probably Derwin James, who came out, you know, several years ago. I think a lot of Ravens fans were upset when they didn't pull the trigger on him. So I'm not sure what that says about how the Ravens value the position, but and that's why I said maybe it's the player, because I think, you know, Kyle Hamilton, maybe not as quite as athletic as James is, but he has a lot more instinctiveness, I think, in the way he plays and the way he processes. He kind of sees the game like a split second ahead, kind of like, you know, Ed Reed. Like I think he has that, you know, natural ability to just like see the plays developing. So that's a unique skill that he has. And then he also just is a really good cover player. Maybe not like man against like an elite wide receiver, but just in what a safety is asked to do. He has great range. And then his instincts like really come into play. So I think the Ravens ran to the podium to draft Kyle Hamilton because they had him as a top five player in this class. And they didn't think that they had a chance of getting him. And then when he started slipping down the draft board because these other teams are, you know, hitting on these high value positions, the Ravens essentially were gift wrapped him.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree about where, you know, the type of player that he is. I mean, he's a guy that could do a lot of different things, and there's a lot of value in that in the NFL. It's just very interesting that the rest of the league, you know, even the trade up in that draft past the Ravens ended up not being for Kyle Hamilton. It ended up being for Jordan Davis. Now, some of that was potentially smoke screening by the Ravens kind of sorting that out. But, you know, I think it's going to be really interesting to see whether or not Kyle Hamilton ends up being that value pick and being that guy that brings that value in that kind of way, or whether he ends up just being another guy. And you know what? The Ravens have been really successful with these top 14 picks. I mean, I think of their last like six top 14 picks, every single one of them has gone to the Pro Bowl. So I think there's some anticipation that the Ravens should have, you know, their ability to identify the top end of where these guys are in talent. And I think that internally they know where their rankings have been historically. So they know whether or not they're getting these guys right, you know, in some regard or another. You know, I think that they can trust themselves on these picks too.
Yeah. And I don't think that the Ravens would have selected Jordan Davis. I think Eric DaCosta alluded that they wouldn't have taken him, that they wanted Hamilton, and that they did like Davis, but they had Hamilton rated ahead of Davis. So I think, you know, Philly moving up, taking Davis, that's fine. I don't think that was necessarily something that they had to do, but you know, if they want to, you know, trade up a couple spots and do that, good for them. But you know, Davis also plays a devalued position. You know, defensive tackle is not like the same type of impact player that, like, you know, someone like, I don't know, a Kayvon Thibodeau would have been on the edge. You know, if Thibodeau was staying there at 13 and he, you know, he's falling down the draft and Philadelphia moves up to grab him, then I'm upset. I'm like, okay, Ravens, you really had a chance to get like the elite edge guy in this class and you passed on it. So I'm okay with them missing out on Davis. You know, we'll get to some of the later picks, but I think they got another defensive tackle who's almost as good in the third round. So, and that's part of, you know, allowing the board come to you. So, you know, I think, you know, Kyle Hamilton is my favorite pick in this draft. I think he's a phenomenal talent. He's someone that I never thought the Ravens would have a chance at. You know, his impact immediately is going to be interesting to see. The Ravens also just signed Marcus Williams to a pretty lucrative contract. So I think that does say, you know, they do actually think the safety is an important position. you know, a new defensive coordinator, like you mentioned, they might be playing a little bit more like two high safety looks, but it also gives you a lot of versatility. And you have Chuck Clark still, who's a good safety. And if he's your third safety, you can do a lot of things in coverage, you know, mixing things up on the back end with those three guys. So I'm really excited to see Hamilton on the field. I think he's going to be an impactful player from day one. And, you know, I think that's what you want to get in your first round pick, especially your first round pick. You want that immediate impact. And I think that's going to happen for sure.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. There are a lot of options that Mike McDonald's going to have in front of him. And Hamilton's going to open up. They're going to use him as a Swiss Army knife. It's going to be really great to see. I'm excited to see how they try and, you know, whether or not they try and hide him and how they deploy him a little bit in the preseason, or whether they just cut him loose and they start to use him in this role because they need to find out whether or not he's able to do it. So it's definitely going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah.
So the next pick that...
I was just going to say, like, we had two first round picks. That wasn't something that we were expecting. So the Marquise Brown trade, it happened. I think we were all surprised by it. And then we get a player that, you know, it's a similar thing that we talked about. Not the most valuable position. We drafted a center. He's not really guard flexible. He's a little undersized for the position. So, you know, he's just going to be a center. This is a little bit more of a questionable decision, in my opinion. I thought that there were other players on the board who might have actually been a better choice, but I think you have someone who's going to come in and be a day one starter, and he's going to make the line better. So from that sense, I think it actually makes sense. I'm just not so convinced that you can't get a player who's pretty good, like 90% of as good later on in the draft. I think that's my issue with the center being drafted that early.
Yeah, you know, this one is probably the hot button issue of the draft, because I know that there was definitely some fans that were super pro Linderbaum to begin with, and some that were very anti Linderbaum. They thought that where, even if his name drifted into the early second, that he wasn't going to be, again, using that term, that right value for where it all shook out. And so in that sense, it's really interesting. You know, if he bulks up a little bit, is that going to take some away from some of his ability to, you know, be as flexible and to be as aggressive in terms of where he is in the draft? And I think that all those are kind of really interesting questions. I think this idea that you can find a center that would be 90% as good as Tyler Linderbaum is overstating it a lot. If you look at what he did in college, and it's not as though he played at University of Delaware, no knock on Joe Flacco, or any of the D1A schools, right? Like, just this idea that it's not like he was playing against subpar competition. It's not like he was playing against small guys. It's not like he wasn't undersized during any of these times. And he was elite during that time in college. So this idea that, like, you can find a guy that could be 90% of the upside of what Tyler Linderbaum is, I don't necessarily agree with that. Now, can you find a guy that could be 90% of a above average center in the fourth, fifth, sixth round of the draft? Yes. Is the expectation that Tyler Linderbaum is going to be a lot more than that? It better darn well be, because you're not trading Marquise Brown, who is a highly underrated wide receiver in his own right, another undersized guy that does a lot of things a little bit differently than you might expect. And I'm okay with them trading away Marquise Brown, but he brought value to this team. He did a lot of things for this offense. Even though he wasn't a run blocker, there were things that he did that made it work. I think that there's an expectation that Linderbaum is going to be a borderline Pro Bowl player as a rookie, and have all pro upside and be the top 1 to 3 centers in the league within 2 years of him being drafted. And if that's the expectation and the Ravens have good cause to see that, then I can understand. I think his pick meets the value. I think whereas Kyle Hamilton's pick exceeds the value, I think Tyler Linderbaum is capped in the sense that he can only be as great as the value that he brings from where he was drafted.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I do like Linderbaum. Like, I think he's a good player. I definitely had him graded as the best center in this class by a considerable margin. I think he's, like I said, going to be a plug-and-play player for the Ravens. You know, last year we saw the Chiefs, you know, draft Creed Humphrey. They drafted him in the second round, but, you know, he was still someone who came in. He was pretty highly regarded, and I think it was a surprise they actually lasted that point. And he was a star for them, like right away. He was probably the best center in the league. If you can get that kind of return on Linderbaum coming in and being like a top, like you said, top three center, making an impact on the Ravens in terms of their ability to pass protect, in terms of their ability to maybe be a little bit more versatile in their run game. You know, they've been this gap power scheme running team for the past like 2.5 years. And that may not be Linderbaum's like best type of play, but Greg Roman is a really good like run schemer. He can like come up with other schemes than what he's been doing. Like you can use him creatively. You can use the athleticism that he has and get him like pulling on the move. You can do a little bit more like wide zone. I think that will actually work out really well with the Ravens offense, just to keep teams off balance. Because I think, and not to take this into a completely different dimension here, but one of the things that the Ravens offense, I think, has where they've stagnated is that they have lost that diversity. Some of what they had back in 2019 and kind of what they were doing with different types of looks in the run game, you know, different personnel packages. And I think, you know, as we continue to talk about this draft class, I think we might see the Ravens getting back to that diverse skill sets that they have both on the offensive line and in their, you know, their weapons at, you know, receiver and even at running back. So I think it's going to be a good change for the Ravens. And, you know, I do think it's going to be a positive thing. The only negative I would say is there's a chance to get a guy like Jermaine Johnson there. That to me is the thing that I'm like, you had Jermaine Johnson, you had George Karlaftis, both of those guys were on the board and you passed on them in order to take the center, which, you know, we talked about it. I think it can work out well. It can be a positive in the end, but I'm not sure if that's the trade-off that I would have done if I was making the choice, but you know, we'll see how it works out. They ended up getting a guy they like with David Ojabo, which we can go ahead and talk about.
Well, and this will be my reminder to you and to every other Ravens fan that is a little sour on Linderbaum. When he connects at the second level on a block and Lamar runs it in for a touchdown, I'm going to remind all of you when that happens, and it's going to happen at least 3 times this year. Like Linderbaum is going to be they're going to find a way to let him be the second level blocker. He's going to take guys out and Lamar's going to take it to the house behind him. There were so many times over the last couple of years where the interior guys could not get to the second level, not make those blocks, and the big runs for Lamar went away because of that. Like when those things, when they come back, those second level blocks, the cutbacks that are going to come in for these running backs, it is the athleticism that he's going to bring in that sense, I think, is going to be exceptionally significant, specifically for Lamar Jackson and J.K. Dobbins.
Yeah. So I agree with you. You know, I was actually a proponent of taking a drafting a guard at 14 if we needed to. If the board felt the same way, I was like, we could draft Zion Johnson, athletic, really good run blocker. I thought he would have been a great fit, plug and play, and that improves your running game. I think Linderbaum does the same. Like, I mean, I like Patrick McCurry. I thought he would have been a good option at center, but he's not that great of a run blocker. You know, Linderbaum has the potential to be an elite run blocker. I think that is something that is really going to get this run game, you know, back to where it was, back to when the Ravens offense was at its best, was when you could be, you know, dominating teams up front. And that's something that we haven't seen as much in the past 2 years.
Yeah, I think, you know, I said this on a podcast with Ken that we recorded last night. I think the biggest winner of this draft was Lamar Jackson. And I think it's specifically because of the offensive line is going to be like the Ravens clearly saw that was the area where they needed to improve. And so whether this pick is value or not, it says to me they wanted to go out and get a guy that they thought would always be between Lamar Jackson and the guy rushing from the middle of the field. And so they're going to get that in Linderbaum, and we'll find out how it's going to pay off. But David Ojabo is a guy that you just mentioned. And I think, I mean, this might be the most interesting pick of the draft, actually, to me, right? Because on a couple levels, one is that guys get hurt, right? They get hurt working out. Look at Juwan James. That's how he got hurt, right? Like they get hurt playing in games like Marlon Humphrey. They get hurt in practice, like Gus Edwards. They get hurt in preseason games like J.K. Dobbins. Like and I could pick players from other teams that fit into all those individual scenarios. Guys get hurt, right? So I think what's really interesting about Ojabo is, one, his value, if he had not gotten hurt, was exceptional. Like a guy that was, you know, if you think Trayvon Walker going all the way to number one was too much, Ajabo was getting as much upside before the injury in how he was being evaluated. And he had become a guy that people were talking about. Oh, well, it seemed like he might be around in the 20 range to like, this is kind of the guy that has the upside that really should be going in like close to the top 10 type range, right? And so by virtue of the Ravens being able to get him with a 45th pick, when guys just get hurt and these kind of things happen, I mean, this injury could have been on the first, this injury could have been during rookie minicamp, right? Instead of during his pro day. He was running a pass defense drill where he was backpedaling when he did this, right? Like, this is, you know, pretty bum luck. So it fits right in with the Ravens and their 12-month recent injury history. Hopefully that this helps get out of the way. But this is a guy with massive, massive upside that, in theory, who is talking about himself on Twitter, potentially trying to be back for the start of the regular season.
Yeah, that would be crazy if that happens. And then it's really a home run pick. You know, assuming that he's like 90-95% of what we saw him as a college player, because his game really was predicated around his ability to be explosive off the edge and be able to bend and get around that defense or offensive tackle. Like, his game was predicated on explosiveness and speed. You rupture your Achilles, do you have that same speed when you come back? Maybe you do. I mean, modern day medicine is pretty impressive. Like, there's a lot of really good, you know, recovery programs. There's excellent doctors out there. Like, they're allowing players to get back faster and stronger than they ever have in the past. So I think there's a good chance that, you know, he will be that same player. I'm not sure if he will be in the first year. I think it does take a little bit longer to kind of get back, but if he can come in and, you know, be like a situational pass rusher for you, even like halfway through the season, I think that is a win in terms of what you get from this player. Especially when you get him at that point in the draft. And then you have like two young, like really impressive pass rushers off the edge between him and Owe, who, by the way, of course, played in high school together. Like, that's a cool story, right? And then also you have Ajabo's connection with Mike McDonald. He was college defensive coordinator last year. So he knows the coordinator. He knows the system. The coordinator knows him. I think it's a great fit from all those reasons. The question is, you know, when can he get on the field? And that's the biggest thing, especially when it really is a position where the Ravens don't have a ton of depth. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Ravens kind of maneuver around, you know, this probably missing some. I mean, there's a chance he comes back and plays week one. I find that extremely low. He most likely starts the season on the PUP. So how do you go about, you know, getting those snaps at outside linebacker? And it's probably going to have to come from guys who are, you know, a little bit further down the depth chart. So we can talk at the end, I think, maybe some gaps that we still see on the roster and some ways that we can go about, you know, attacking those things. But I think, you know, if you can get the upside out of him and if you can get him, especially in like 2023 and 2024, to be like that high end pass rusher, then getting him in the second round is a huge win for the Ravens.
And if you know, my thing about the whole, you know, if you want to talk about value and you want to talk about who is on the board, a lot of the edge guys were at this point mostly gone. I think, you know, Sam Williams, who a lot of people didn't love and had some character questions to kind of go with him, right? Drake Jackson, I think, went after him. Nick Bonito, but even those guys all went in like the late 50s and 60s. So, you know, those were guys that if the Ravens felt like, you know, felt really strongly about, they were guys that they could have taken in this spot or guys that they could have traded back and still had a crack at. I think the Ravens are a little less worried about outside linebacker than the rest of, you know, the fans are. But it's also been a very interesting staple of these Eric DaCosta teams that every year they go in with a position that there are some questions around. And it's like, look, these are the guys that we have. We hope they're going to get the job done. If they don't, we'll figure it out. You know, obviously, inside linebacker is an easier place to compensate for that than outside linebacker, right? And particularly edge rusher in particular. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see whether or not that plays out. It's going to be interesting to see if they need that value. But, you know, if Bowser's able to come back, and Bowser's injury was, you know, right at the end of the regular season. So he's got almost 2.5 months of recovery on in front of Ajabo. So if you think, you know, not you, but if somebody were to think that Ajabo could be back by November 1st,
realistically, you're talking about Bowser being ready very close to the beginning of the season. You've got Dalen Hayes. You know, there may be, they've got, and you've got Justin Houston on the tender now. It may not be as dire as some people thought it was. And then Ajabo just explodes in terms of value for what he might bring later in the year. And then in years two, three, and four of his, you know, after being drafted.
And we've been kind of trained to have this requirement for multiple, like, good outside linebackers on the Ravens. And that's something that they've had for the past, you know, probably two or three years. It's been kind of like a really deep position for the Ravens. And even though like the production hasn't always been there, they've had like a strong rotation. And if you look at like other teams around the NFL, most teams don't have three good outside linebackers or three good defensive ends. They have like one good defensive end, maybe two, if like you're lucky. So, I mean, Owe, I think, is a good player for the Ravens. He had a great rookie year. He's going to get better. I think he's someone that they're going to lean on a lot. I also had a podcast with Ken recently. We talked about the outside linebacker position. I think I'm expecting Owe to take a leap. I'm expecting him to be someone who probably will hit those like high percentage of snaps, 75-80% on the field. And he can play both sides. He can play rush. He can play Sam. And then, you know, they'll figure out the rest. You know, you have Hayes coming off an injury. Like you mentioned Houston, he's still someone who is potentially likely going to be on the roster. Jalen Ferguson, he can, you know, be someone who's still there for his last season of his rookie deal. So I think there are some options there. I mean, outside of just Bowser coming back and hoping that he's healthy.
And even outside of position and all that, I think, you know, and this was a deeper draft than a normal draft. So this may be slightly different in that regard, but there's not a lot of expectation that the guy picked at 45 overall and later, right? Really, that like they're going to be an immediate impact, come in, bang, bang, like be a starter kind of player, right? Like I think that those expectations have been elevated somewhat because of Ajabo's kind of like broader history of being labeled as potentially being, you know, an early first round pick type value. But even the Ravens historically out of the second round, I mean, Dobbins, you know, obviously recently being a second round guy that they were really successful with, but historically have just not extracted a lot of value from the second round. Like it took Bowser a long time to develop, like Correa, Max Williams, Timmy Jernigan, like Arthur Brown. I'm cheating because I'm looking up for reference, but like Courtney Upshaw. You got to go all the way back to Kelechi Osemele before you see another, like, and then Torrey Smith. So in back-to-back kind of second rounds. But then even before that, Sergio Kindle, Paul Kruger was not an impact guy early in his career either. So it's just like, you've got to go, like, you're not going to, this expectation that your second round pick is going to come in and immediately pay dividends, you know, I also think is a little high-minded, maybe, if you call it, from any analyst or fan that might have that expectation.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. And I was never expecting Ajabo, even if he was 100% healthy and he comes in as a first round pick, taking at 14. I wasn't expecting him to be someone who's going to be a three down player for you. He's raw as a run defender, to be honest. And he's someone who really was just going to be a pass rush specialist. I think that's going to be his role regardless of probably for the first couple of years he's in the league, because he needs to get stronger at the point of attack in terms of his ability to defend the run. And, you know, that's okay if he can get you like, you know, eight sacks as a pass rush specialist. I think he has that in him to do that, assuming he comes back, you know, healthy for a full season. So I'm still, you know, I think the upside is definitely there. It is a little bit of a risky pick because there's a chance that he just, you know, he never kind of pans out. You know, you never know with the guys coming off that type of injury. But, you know, there's a risk for any player you draft. So that's always going to be baked into it no matter what.
Well, and, you know, pass rush doesn't just have to come from outside linebacker. And so we can talk about the Ravens' next pick as a spot where, I mean, Ravens fans have been begging for pressure up the middle in the pocket for, you know, basically since Haloti Ngata was able to do it effectively. I mean, I think it's been some time since we've seen a guy consistently be able to bring that heat and pressure from the interior of the defensive line. And I'm probably forgetting some guys that have done it. Like Willie Henry had a nice little run there. Before he kind of seemed to lose it a little bit. And, you know, I'm sure there have been some other guys that have had some of that interior pressure, but Travis Jones is the guy that there was buzz that he was going to be an early second round pick, or, you know, potentially even be the kind of guy that, like, you know, like Barmore when he got taken by Tampa, was a guy that, like, people liked the interior pressure upside of, and someone was going to snag him late because of that. And so the idea that he got all the way into the third round and that he got to the Ravens with the 76th pick, you know, he was a guy, you and I were talking when we were at the draft in the second round, that you said you wouldn't have been upset with if the Ravens would have taken him 45. Yeah. So they got him 31 picks later. You've got to be pretty happy about that value.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, I say Kyle Hamilton, I thought, was my favorite pick. Travis Jones is not far behind him. I had him as my 31st best player in this class. For me, he would have been a great pick at 45. So if you flip those picks and you take Travis Jones at 45 and then Ojabo at 76, I think that's still good value. So, you know, any way you cut it, that's like a fantastic draft. I think getting those guys, I don't know how he lasted till 76. You know, just real quick, the reason why I had him rated so highly, he came from a smaller school. UConn was not like the, you know, is not like a huge, you know, like NFL factory. But athletically, he is almost as impressive as the guy the Ravens were, you know, linked to in Jordan Davis. And he went one pick before the Ravens at pick 13 in the first round. This guy had, he's 6'4", like 330 pounds. He ran a sub 5.40. He ran a 4.9 40, which is insane for someone his size. You look at him on film and he's a better pass rusher than Jordan Davis is. He's more developed. He can actually provide that interior pass rush, like you mentioned. He's also a really good run defender. Like, this is a player who's going to be an impact player, I think, from the Ravens from day one. They're going to get him into this rotation with Matt Ebike. They'll use him up front. Campbell, you brought in Michael Pierce. You can kind of move those guys around the defensive front. You might even see a little bit more Calais Campbell playing like true edge snaps now. That's something that he's done in the past. If the Ravens are short at outside linebacker and they want to be a little bigger up front, they can put Campbell out there on the edge and kind of have three bigger bodies and have, you know, Owe on the other side of him. I think that's something that could actually be an interesting look for them up front. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do it a little bit with McDonald. So I'm really excited about Jones. I think he's going to be a phenomenal player for the Ravens. You know, I saw somebody call him arbitrage Jordan Davis in the draft. Like, this is the guy who's like, you know, we talked about the guy who's 90% of Tyler Linderbaum you can get later on. I think this is the guy that's like 90-95% of Jordan Davis, and you get him two rounds later. I think it's phenomenal. I think he's going to be a great player, and I'm so happy that he's a Raven because he totally fits everything they want to do.
Yeah, it's hard to not be excited about the Ravens adding some interior defensive line talent. There was an area where they needed to get younger. This was a position that I was a little bit worried about as we were headed into the offseason, but the addition of Jones and the addition of Michael Pierce really, really took, and then bringing back Calais Campbell really solidified. I mean, that's three starters right there. Like, that could be some team starting 3-4 defensive line. So it's exciting to see the Ravens kind of make a commitment and say this is a spot that we've got to bring in and see some improvement. And so he'll be a guy to definitely keep an eye on. I think one of the big things that we've heard is that he played a lot of snaps for UConn. And so in a rotational situation where they're asking him to rush the passer, you know, and especially if you can put like him and Matt Ebike out there on the field together and ask, let them both kind of get after it from a pass rush perspective, is that going to be a really menacing combo from those two guys in those situations? I'm excited to see what that's going to turn out to be.
Yeah, I think this might be, you know, on paper, one of the better defensive units or defensive line units that the Ravens have had in recent memory, just in terms of the talent. I think Pierce is an upgrade over Brandon Williams, to be honest. Campbell is still, I think, a very good player. You know, he probably is going to be a little bit more on a snap count than he has been in the past couple of seasons. But you know, with Matt Ebike, with, you know, with Jones, and then if Derek Wolfe can give you anything, like, he's still a very good run defender, I think. I mean, he might not be on this team. We'll see what happens with him, but there's definitely a lot of upside there. And you know, Broderick Washington, you know, he played some good snaps for the Ravens last year. I think he's someone who can still be part of that rotation. I don't want to completely leave him out. So, you know, it's hard to find many teams with that kind of depth and of talent along their defensive front. So even though, you know, they might not have the awesome like outside linebacker depth that the Ravens have had the past couple of years, I think the defensive line talent kind of makes up for that.
And the Ravens are always a really good at finding defensive linemen. I mean, that would be the one area where in a couple of years, if the Ravens turned up a couple of interior like studs, you know, a la Michael Pierce and you know, Brandon Williams, and over time, you know, Travis Jones gets that
that extra star of like the Ravens really do know what they're doing when it comes to defensive linemen, both in drafting and development. So, you know, one of the areas where I think we were all worried about the Ravens heading into the draft was like, what is it going to be like on at offensive tackle, right? We all have PTSD for what happened with Ronnie Stanley and Orlando Brown last year. We head into, you know, coming off of, you know, and we're two seasons away from that, but coming off of 2019 when the Ravens really built a lot of their success around those two guys, right? Having to basically play two seasons later without either of them really showed up on film. There were some questions as to whether the Ravens had enough depth. A lot of folks, you know, pundits included, love the Morgan Moses addition. The Juwan James is a nice little wild card that, you know, a starter level guy that could be had at a discount if he's healthy and ready to play. But the Ravens get their offensive tackle project here in the fourth. With that, this vaunted, as we kind of go through this fourth round of the draft, they get their big developmental tackle, which comes with, again, massive upside. I mean, this is four players that it's hard not to say Eric DaCosta took a shot, you know, for the fences with every single one of them. That if they were to pan out to their maximum potential, any one of these guys is going to be a Pro Bowl level player or better. And Falale definitely falls into that bunch to me.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more hesitant about Falale, or how you pronounce it, Falale. I think he's a developmental tackle. I think he needs to probably work on a few things. You know, he had some issues in college with like speed rushers on the edge. He's very big, obviously. I think we all know that. He's, you know, pushing 400 pounds. I'd like to see him play closer to like 360, 370 than where he is now. I think if he can get a little bit more nimble, a little bit lighter, that's probably going to serve him well. I think, you know, being in an NFL environment is going to be good for him. And I think the one thing that he really can improve about it, just the, and this is sounds lame, but he needs to be a little nastier. He needs to play a little bit more violently. I think he, you know, he does his job when he's on the field, when he gets his hands on you, but he doesn't really finish blocks the way you'd like to see someone who's 400 pounds, like finishing blocks. You'd like to see him just like taking guys into the ground. That's my concern with him, that he plays a little bit soft, and that he doesn't quite have that like ability to handle speed off the edge. I do think the upside is phenomenal. Like he can be like, I mean, he might be the next Orlando Brown. Like he has that potential, or, you know, the guy that the Eagles, you know, signed to an extension, Mailata, who was also someone who had very limited NFL player experience or football experience, I should say. He played rugby, but he has this massive size, you know, physicality, athleticism combo that is important for the position. So I think, you know, it's a good pick at that spot. You know, the Ravens definitely needed a future right tackle. I think there's a potential for him to be a very good one. I do think he needs some time to get there, and the Ravens are in a good position to allow him to develop. So I think for all that said, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, and given who was on the board here, the Ravens, you know, a lot of the tackles were off the board. So it allowed them to wait a little bit to take a guy that they thought might be a good project. But, you know, a lot of the knocks on Falale are not all that different than the knocks you heard on Orlando Brown. And other than Falale being much, like, Falale is just a bigger, like, and it's weird to say this because Orlando Brown was also 6'8", so they're just both massive, massive human beings. I mean, he's also just a bigger guy. I mean, his hands, I think, are like two and a quarter inches bigger than Orlando Brown's. Like, even though he's not significantly taller, he's just a bigger guy than him. I think that does add some ability to say he's not going to be as quick, and it is going to slow him down. He's going to have to figure out how to get through that and how to handle that. But you know what? The best answer to that is Lamar Jackson. And you know what? If he's going to be a guy that lets people beat him up the field, he can just push them up the field. And Lamar is going to take advantage of that. And so being a right tackle in front of Lamar Jackson makes it a lot easier. And so if he is pushed into some kind of duty as it's required, or as he develops into this, he's in the right place to be his type of guy for this type of team. And so I like the pick a lot because of that regard.
Yeah, I think my only concern is I still don't know who is the backup left tackle. I guess it's Morgan Moses. He probably has the most experience playing left tackle on the current roster. Falale has not played any left tackle ever in college. He played right tackle only. I think James is also basically right tackle only. You know, Makari plays some left tackle in college, but it's probably not ideal to have him play left tackle. He's a little undersized for that. So I think it would be Moses. And then you have, you know, next man up at right tackle, whether that's James or Makari or Falale, whoever is, you know, probably the most ready. I would probably go with James if he's, you know, back from being from his injury. I think he could be a starter potentially for this team if they needed him to be. So I think the Ravens have depth there. They don't have a lot of guys with left tackle experience. So that's my, you know, my concern, but I don't think they're going to be adding anybody at this point.
Yeah, and I don't know there's anybody that they could add. I think Moses is going to be the guy if they need him to be. And so, knock on wood, Ronnie Stanley is back. I mean, that he's probably, to me, the biggest X factor for this entire season. If he comes back and plays like he played a couple years ago, this team's just going to be, they're so much better with him. And it's going to be so much harder to beat them. So, with the next pick, the Ravens took a position that I think a lot of us are also concerned about. And this is the first of their double dips in the fourth round. And so we saw them take Jalen Armour-Davis. And so this is, you know, this is another interesting pick, I thought, for the Ravens, because this is a guy that really kind of traits heavy, coming off of an injury, doesn't have a lot of film, like flashed at times when he had it. But, you know, there's a question of, like, is he going to be able to stay on the field and turn, you know, what they saw from him potentially into an opportunity where he could actually play?
Yeah, I was actually really high on Jalen Armour-Davis. I was doing a lot of mock drafts prior to the draft. I had him as the guy that the Ravens would be targeting in the fourth round. I thought he was going to be there because of those very reasons you mentioned. He had some injury history, really only a one-year starter at Alabama, but because of those traits that you spoke of, you know, he's a sub-440 guy, he's 6 foot. He's got good length. I think he does, you know, have good coverage skills. He's not like the perfect kind of player, or I think he would have gone a lot higher, but the upside is extremely high with him. And I think, you know, he really, I mean, I don't want to compare him to Anthony Averett, although it's an obvious comparison to make. You know, like, I think they were both fourth round picks, both out of Alabama, both kind of raw players, good speed, athleticism combination. And I think in terms of what their role is going to be, it's going to be similar. You know, he's going to be the third or fourth cornerback on the team. He might be pressed into duty this year. I think there's probably a good chance that that will happen. We'll see how that third cornerback position shakes out, because are they going to plug someone in at the slot? Because I don't think that's Jalen Armour-Davis. Or are they going to put Davis on the outside and put Humphrey into the slot? There'll be some decisions and things will shake out there. It's going to be interesting to watch. But I think that, you know, at the very least, you got somebody who you can bring in and develop and potentially have someone who by the end of like year two, three is starter caliber. And I think that's exactly what the Ravens need.
Yeah, and I think he's got upside that if they need him to come in a pinch, that he's going to be able to. And I see him as the fourth corner. I mean, he is the fourth corner to start. I mean, he's not going to leapfrog Brandon Stevens. So barring kind of any health issues from Marcus Peters or Marlon Humphrey to start the year, I mean, it's not like they're pressing him in immediately, but I do think that he played well enough, you know, at a high college level that he was a guy that, you know, if called upon, you're not getting... I'm trying to think of the guy's name. We were talking about this when we were at the draft. Oh my gosh. And now I'm forgetting his name again. It's the guy that got abused by Tom Brady in the Patriots game over and over and over, and then got the contract with the Colts.
Rashawn Melvin is his name?
Rashawn Melvin. Yeah. Rashawn Melvin. Like it's not going to be that level of guy where doesn't have the pedigree, doesn't have the experience. When he comes in, he's just going to be completely exposed. I think you get a little more than that from your fourth corner. And quite frankly, I'm pretty happy with that overall for the Ravens.
Yeah, and what you said about Brandon Stevens is interesting because, you know, he's another player who didn't really have a lot of experience in college playing corner. You know, he was initially a running back when he was recruited, then changed schools, changed position. The Ravens saw him as potential safety, and that's where he played predominantly last year when the Ravens, you know, lost safeties and they needed help there. So we'll see if he goes back to playing that position. Is he going to be the Ravens starting slot guy? I mean, that's potential there. We didn't really see too much of that last year. It was a little bit. He does have versatility in the secondary. So I do think that, you know, there is an opportunity for Brandon Stevens to be that third corner. But I think it's going to be an interesting decision because there's a couple other guys on the roster who might also, you know, make a play for being that first guy who comes and plays in the slot.
Sorry, when I said third corner, I meant specifically third corner or fourth corner on the outside. I don't see Brandon Stevens playing much in the slot. I don't think he's that high twitch guy. I don't think he's a fit there. I think the Ravens ask too much processing from that position. From what we saw last year, Brandon Stevens is not very good at that. I think he's going to be better on the outside. I don't think he's a good blitzer. I think he's just, unless the system changes significantly under McDonald, I don't think that Stevens is going to be a good fit for that. That being said, I think that our Darius Washington is a perfect fit for that in a lot of other ways, and he will take that spot. So I guess if you want to call that the third corner, then that makes Armour Davis the fifth corner. And I think that's an okay thing for me overall. I think that's good for the Ravens, and this is the exact kind of depth pick that they needed at corner.
Yeah, because I do really envision Armour Davis more as like an outside corner only, and maybe that's Brandon Stevens too. So maybe he is like that kind of, you know, whatever Jimmy Smith was last year, kind of that fourth guy as on the outside in terms of your depth chart. And that's probably a good place to be for a rookie cornerback. And I agree with you. I really liked our Darius Washington in the slot. I think he has, you know, that feistiness. He's undersized, but he doesn't play undersized. He plays bigger than he is. And I think he was really sticky when we saw him play there in the preseason. I think that those traits will actually transition well. So I think he might have the advantage going in, but we'll have to see. You know, he's also coming back from injury, so it's gonna be interesting to see how this cornerback depth chart, you know, shakes out, because there's also a couple of veterans, Dorsey, I think Seymour, guys who might just be good enough to stick around, so we'll see how that goes. It's gonna be interesting.
Well, and I think that they let Westry go because they like the guys that they have. I think they keep Westry if they didn't trust Stevens to be an outside guy. It's a solid group that we were much more worried about the day Anthony Averett was signed away. I'm feeling better about where they are overall. So let's keep rolling through these guys because we've got a lot more picks to cover and not a lot of time now. So the next guy is like a very similar guy to Mark Andrews. You know, Charlie Kohler is a guy that a lot of people had mocked to the Ravens as well. I think he is a good fit. I don't think that he's as good, at least from what I saw, of a route runner as Mark Andrews is, but he brings the same kind of sense in terms of kind of how he reads the zones. He's he's good with his hands, not a lot of drops. And I think he's the exact kind of fit that the Ravens needed another tight end to do what Hayden Hurst was doing. And I think Charlie Kohler could be that guy precisely this upcoming year.
Yeah, I wasn't as high on Kohler because I saw him as more of a receiver only. He didn't impress me with his blocking, and that was a little bit concerning, although I think he might be able to develop into that. He has a frame where it looks like he can add some weight. I think, you know, one of the interesting things about him, and what I didn't realize in the analysis or the process leading up to the draft, was, you know, he's like an academic All-American. Like, he's a really smart guy. I think mechanical engineer. Both of his parents are professors, so like he comes from like, you know, an environment of like very like quick, like analytical, like processing, like lots of like being able to like see the field and like understand leverage. And I think that's one of the things you see when you watch him, is like understanding what defenders are looking at and being able to kind of like almost outsmart them on the field and be able to use his body. I think he boxes out well. I think he'll be a red zone threat. So I think he will definitely have a role in this team. He needs to get better as a blocker.
There weren't a lot of people that thought Mark Andrews was going to be a good blocker when he came out of college either. And he just didn't play. I mean, some of that is just virtue of how the college game has changed. Like, these guys aren't situationally coached up to or asked to block a lot. So they're put in, when they are, they're put in a pretty bad position because it's situational. So I'm willing to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. He's a big guy, right? 6'6", 250 plus. So, you know, like you said, the bones are potentially there to be a good blocker. So I think he's a good fit, though. And like, look, Hayden Hurst wasn't known as a great blocker when he came in either. So I think that some of that is something that you can work with, and hopefully there's something there for kind of where the Ravens develop. But I think tight end was an area where the Ravens really needed to figure out what was going on, because these last couple of years, once Boyle went down, there was just no meaningful depth behind him at tight end.
Yeah, I think that's really important, just to have some semblance of Mark Andrews insurance, because he's such an integral part of this offense. Having somebody who is, you know, a legitimate pass catching threat at tight end to back him up, I think is incredibly important. So that's going to pay dividends. I mean, I hope it doesn't pay dividends by, you know, Mark Andrews not being able to be on the field, but, you know, just having that ability to at least maybe replace that value that Andrews brings if for some reason he wasn't out there, that's important. And then, you know, I think it's also an eye to the future. Like, Nick Boyle isn't going to be on the Ravens forever. I think, you know, his play has declined the past couple of years due to injuries, unfortunately. If Kolar can, you know, add on maybe 10 more pounds and become a more of a two threat, like two-way tight end, he can be a good pass catcher and a good blocker. That can bring really good value, especially if you pair him with Andrews. And I think the other selection that we're going to talk about very shortly.
It's very likely. So with the next pick for the Ravens, let's just talk about my favorite pick in the draft because it's got a fantastic name. Jordan Stout, the punter. I mean, I like this pick for the Ravens. If he's a punter that you like, this allows you to save $2 million on the cap. Sam Cook has been rumored to be ready to retire for quite some time. Hopefully, you know, he still comes into camp and they work together, or the Ravens figure out some way to work that out. But all around, you know, I like it. I can understand why some people would be frustrated about where the value is in the fourth round. This is super Ravens. This is what I think this is the second or third punter the Ravens have drafted in the fourth round, because they drafted Zastadil in the fourth round, and they drafted, was it Cook or somebody else?
I think Cook was a fifth round pick.
I think, okay. So, but the Ravens have been known to draft punters in this round, this range of the draft. I think it's important to have a guy that can pin and is a good punter. You know, you can argue with the value though here. I think that would be the one big knock on it.
Yeah, I like the player a lot. I agree with the Ravens assessment that he was the best punter in this draft class. If you just look at, you know, the analytics and, you know, his ability to land punts inside the 20, to land punts inside the 10, and to not get touchbacks, and really to get like that net, you know, average, I think it was like 47 or something crazy good, by far the best in this class. So I think it's a great player. I do quibble a little bit with taking him here when you have a player that you really like, because the Ravens talked about Calvin Austin, the wide receiver out of Memphis, who they really liked, and they gambled and let him go to Pittsburgh. You could have taken him at this spot and waited and gotten the punter later on in the fourth round. You still had two more fourth round picks. I think that's something that you could have done.
I'm with that like analysis, and I get why people are upset that the Ravens didn't get Austin, but like, in what world does it make any freaking sense for the Pittsburgh Steelers to have drafted two wide receivers? They've already got Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool on their roster. They took Pickens. They claimed Boykin off the Ravens. Like, if you are into like any kind of game theory, like, it was pretty darn surprising that the Steelers double dipped at the probably one of the deepest positions they have on their entire roster going into this draft. So, I think that's a good thing for the Ravens, because it doesn't make any sense in terms of value to me for Pittsburgh, unless they really just wanted to block him from getting to the Ravens. But I think that's a worthwhile risk for them to take. And how much value do you really I think the Ravens will extract more value from Stout than the Steelers will likely ultimately get from Austin.
I don't disagree with that necessarily. I mean, you never know. I mean, Austin has that profile where it's pretty hard for a guy his size to actually, you know, make it in the NFL. He's under 5'8", but he's pretty thick. He's like 175, I think. Like, he has, you know, a pretty impressive athletic profile. If you just look at his testing numbers, they were kind of off the charts in terms of what he could do, short area quickness. And then if you watch him, he actually, like, he played outside receiver in Memphis, and he had some of those kind of gadgety plays too, but like, he was actually a good threat downfield, even though he's, you know, undersized. But he was a good route runner. He was competitive at the catch point. Well, like, that's a good player that I think you missed on.
When is he gonna get snaps though? Like it, to me, it's not an issue of like him whether or not he's a good player. He is gonna be behind Claypool, Johnson.
I don't care about him on the Steelers. I care about him what he could be on the Ravens.
Right, but what I'm saying is the Ravens will extract more value from Jordan Stout being a Raven than the Steelers will extract from Austin being a Steeler.
That's fine, but the Ravens could have potentially had both players. That's what I'm saying. You could have had Stout and Austin.
I don't know that the Ravens were going to extract a lot of value out of a fourth-round wide receiver pick anyway. I, I, at the end of the day, I think this is a guy that's going to save you $2 million on the cap. He guaranteed to save you $2 million on the cap when they cut Cook. Right, it's a one-for-one trade-off in terms of the roster, and it's a position where, I mean, if James Prochet can't get on the field, I just don't see a world of which a fourth round, I understand the fuss over this and why people are upset about it, but I just don't think Austin was going to get on the field this year, and I think it was a really low likelihood that he was going to be any kind of long-term high impact. There's just this dream amongst Ravens fans that any wide receiver in any position at any time, if drafted by the Ravens, is going to become this amazing wide receiver, even though they've had all these other wide receivers that none of which became that either. The Ravens liking a guy doesn't mean that he's going to be a good wide receiver at all.
I think the chances of him being a very successful good wide receiver are slim, just based off of the size alone. You don't have players at that size that really exceed at the wide receiver position, honestly, at any position in the NFL. So I think, you're probably right, but I think there's an opportunity missed there. And I'm going to quibble a little bit with the approach that was taken, but in the end, I think, the Ravens came away with a punter. I like the punter. I think he's going to be a good player. Like you said, he's going to save money on the cap because Cook is going to retire most likely. And then, you still have a couple other picks that you made in the draft. So hopefully those players pan out. Not everybody's going to pan out, but, hopefully you get some value out of every single person that you picked up in this fourth round. Six draft picks in the fourth round is pretty crazy, but I think there's something that you can get out of all of them. So I'm glad that they were able to make all those picks.
Well, and so going to the next guy, I liked Likely as a better pick than Austin. So for all the fuss there was over Austin, and I guess this is why I kind of get a little riled up about it. I don't really understand the fuss, because Isaiah Likely is a much better fit for what the Ravens need from a receiver in terms of size perspective. Yes, he didn't bring it as an elite blocker in terms of what he was doing in college. But again, he's a huge dude, another 6'6", almost 250 guy that the Ravens are bringing in. Incredibly twitchy, incredibly athletic, right? Almost in terms of physicality, brings the exact kind of profile of what you might like. And yes, he's not a wide receiver, but in a lot of ways, the Ravens, I think, are going to use him like an X or in the slot or, as that extra guy, from a wide receiver perspective. And I'd rather have the big guy. I was a big fan of Alec Pierce for the same reason. I'd rather have the big guy than the little guy in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, I think Likely is a good pick. So I'm not going to hate on that pick. I liked what he was as a prospect. I actually had him rated higher than Kolar on my personal board. I thought he was a better, just more athletic kind of route runner, more natural route runner. He could get separation in his routes. He has more explosiveness to him. I think I saw a stat he had 5+50-yard receptions or something like that. He played for a smaller school, more open offense, but he was basically a big slot receiver for them. He basically played the Mark Andrews role on their team, where he was one of their main receiving threats playing in the slot. I think, you have another guy you can move around potentially. You talked about Kolar in that Hurst role before, but I think Likely can do that as well. You can, line him up as H-back. You can put him in the slot. We can see some of these three tight end looks that we've seen from the Ravens in the past when they've wanted to do that. So it's an interesting pick. I think, the tight end room that has been kind of a question mark in the past suddenly becomes a strength on this team. Andrews has always been a strength, but the depth behind him has been questionable, especially last year. And when they lost Boyle to injury, it was kind of this rotating cast of guys who were back into the roster. Now I think you have, several players who can come in and be impactful, not just hopefully as some sort of a run blocker, but also as pass catching threats. And that's what's really exciting about it, because you can get these guys in the field, bigger bodies who can also really catch the ball. And I think that's something that the Ravens have needed, whether it's at wide receiver or it's at tight end.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm glad to see them bring in some athleticism, into some of these spots. So with this last pick in the fourth round, the Ravens decide finally to go double dip on corner. I shouldn't say finally, double dip on corner, and go after specifically a slot corner type guy. And a lot of folks, I don't know a lot of about Damarrion Williams, but it seemed like from everything that I've been reading that the athletic profile fits exactly that. Very Tavon Young-ish in terms of what they went after here. And I think that's exactly the kind of guy you want to bring in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie, he wasn't high on my list. I think I didn't really watch him. He was probably the second best corner on his team, which is, that's okay. Like there was another guy who was a little undersized on Houston who was good. But Williams, he has, like you said, he's that profile. I think he can play in the slot. He can play outside if you want him to. From what I've seen, he looks like he has good instincts. He has some ball skills. He's willing to get mix it up in the run game. He's aggressive moving downhill. So I think these are all things that translate well to the slot cornerback position in the NFL. He has that quick twitch about him. You like to see that. So I think he can come in and compete. We talked about Darius Washington earlier. And so he might be a guy who's really in that mix to be the starter at the slot cornerback, so to speak. He seems like an intelligent player. He's well-spoken. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. So, last pick of the fourth round, I wanted to see the Ravens double dip a corner. I'm glad they did. They needed the depth there. So I think that, this is definitely one of those selections that is going to pan out for them.
Yeah, and I mean it's hard to argue with kind of this type of guy that you bring in with a fourth this spot. This was to me very clearly almost nearly a need pick, right? They were like, we need somebody that's going to come in, fill out our corner room, be a guy that could develop in that regard. They like this guy, and then I think the pick after that with Tyler Beatty is the same way. I think that we need insurance in terms of what's going to be happening in the long term with Gus Edwards. What we want to be going with this offense. We had two guys that were hurt last year. We were absolutely burned by having to rely on veterans with almost zero athleticism at all whatsoever going into last year. So we take a guy that's been really productive in college and is a guy that, could fit right in terms of the system and what the Ravens are doing.
Yeah, I like Beatty a lot. He was someone that I thought, the Ravens could pick as early as the fourth round. He has that nice pedigree, very productive in college. A little undersized, but he runs hard. I think he's probably projected more to be like a third down role in the NFL based off of that. He does have a nice pair of hands on him. And, the Ravens probably haven't utilized the running back in the passing game as much as we liked. This is something we always wanted Justice Hill to do, but it never seemed to really work out for him. He's probably not going to make it on this roster, Justice Hill, I mean, but I think Beatty's someone who can be a very viable option for the Ravens right away, basically. And I think they needed somebody to be, maybe not just a third down back, just someone who can come in and really carry the rock if they need to with the guys coming back off of injury. We don't know with two players coming back from an ACL, it's really hard to know exactly how they're going to perform, what their fitness level is, what their health level is. I think getting a running back in this draft was critical, and I think they made a good pick. And for the value in the sixth round, I think it was fantastic.
Yeah, I totally agree, and they needed it. And, I think there's a decent chance that Justice Hill is either gone. He could also start the year out on the PUP if the Ravens want to kind of keep him as an insurance policy as they head into the year. So he's an extra guy when they get into later into the season. You keep him fresh. You keep him protected. You don't let him get hurt. So, a lot of upside between, and we don't even have time to get into the undrafted guys here. But a lot of upside for this draft, a lot of, and we can both kind of give our closing thoughts about the draft in general here. What I thought was interesting is that the Ravens were not picking based on need exclusively. They definitely leaned best player available, but by the time the entirety of the draft shook out, they still filled a lot of gaps. And some of the, whether you want to call them major or minor holes on this roster, really do feel like they've been filled in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you start the draft out when you have 11 picks, you're taking best player available. And then as those best players start to fill out and you start to see how the roster is shaping, then with that, all those fourth round picks that you accumulated, you had the opportunity to start taking picks for need. So maybe, going into the draft, you don't necessarily think you're going to take, Damarian Williams in the fourth round, but he's your best cornerback available and you want to get two corners and it makes sense to take him there, even though, maybe there's a couple other players higher than him. And that's fine. I think, he's still a good pick there. The same might even be true for the tight end position. They said, okay, who's the best pass catcher who's available at this spot? It wasn't a wide receiver, it was a tight end, so you take Likely. I think that might have been what the processing was there, and I think it makes sense. And, overall, with both the intersection of value and need that they kind of hit on in a lot of places, you know, I think it was a very successful draft class. You know, we wanted to see that happen with all the picks that the Ravens had going into it. And I think they really did a good job of meeting those expectations, coming away with a roster that I think really on paper looks pretty solid. There's still a couple of question marks. You know, we talked about the outside linebacker position. If you can bring back Justin Houston, that helps a lot. And then maybe the two other question marks would be left guard. I think that's still kind of a rotation of players. We don't know who's going to stick there as a starter. Cleveland, Phillips, Powers, one of those guys needs to step up and take that spot. And then I think outside, wide receiver, that's the biggest question mark, right? Like, you have one guy who's like definitely a go-to receiver in Rashad Bateman. Outside of that, it's a kind of a bunch of like number three guys. Who's going to step up into that number two? Are you going to sign a free agent? I think there's guys available. That's really the question marks that I have left over.
Yeah, to me, this is the great look. And for anybody that listens to us regularly or follows me on social media, you know that I'm not a big Greg Roman fan. I think that there are challenges to a lot of what his approach has been and how that's executed. This is Greg Roman's draft, right? Like, this is like, you bring in an athletic center that can actually screen and pull and do all the kind of crazy things that he likes to do in that regard, get to the second level, right? Like, you bring in extra tight ends instead of wide receivers. So like, you are going to stay tight. You're going to stay heavy. You're going to stay big in this process, right? Like, get into that classroom, start drawing up the X's and O's and do your thing, Greg Roman, because this is your chance to prove all of us wrong that have said that you can't do it, that isn't sustainable, that we can't bring back what they did in 2019. This is the personnel to do it with. They're going to be heavy. They're going to be big. Let's see it happen.
Yeah, I think the offense, and you see Lamar Jackson's a winner. I completely agree with that. I think they built back the offensive line. There's a lot less questions. Even the depth, I think, is better. There's not really one position where you'd have somebody that's completely like has to be out there. Like, we talked about Stanley, like, obviously that's probably the most important position on the offensive line. But I think there's enough guys there that you can actually get by. For some reason, he had to miss some time. So I feel much better about that than I have in the past few years where there's been questionable depth. And that's really going to make Lamar Jackson into, you know, the player that we've seen him at MVP caliber, because he's so much better when he has time to kind of sit in the pocket and analyze. He's still going to be a threat with his legs if he wants to be, but even, you know, a mediocre receiving core can get open if he has 3 or 4 minutes. So what he can do maneuvering the pocket, different arm angles he can throw with, you know, he can throw receivers open, and that's something, and he can move receivers open with the way he moves with his legs. So like, I think having good protection is going to really elevate this offense to what we haven't seen for the past couple of years. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going to be a super exciting year. Really excited to see what happens at training camp and some of these battles with some of these positions. The depth chart is going to be really interesting. I think we'll be getting back on here on this podcast once we kind of get into training camp and some of these battles become a little bit more clear and some of the defining of these depth charts become a little bit more clear about what those positions look like. So we're excited to talk about it. Thanks for tuning into the Situation Room, and we'll see you guys next time.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.